Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life on what must be the fourth today of October. Just having a slurp of an early morning hot drink. I have slept right through, which was very nice, but I went to bed about 11:30, I think it was, last night. Went straight through the night, and I've just woken up. It's 7:30, so that's pretty good hours. But you know what it's like? Sometimes you have a good night's sleep, and you drag yourself out of bed, and you think, oh, actually, I must have been out of the wrong phase. You know, maybe I should have got up 30 minutes earlier, 30 minutes later, and I would have come out to, I don't know what woke me up. Oh, the alarm. Anyway, a bit bunged up this morning, but that will pass, of course. So I've come downstairs. I need to go and have a shave. I'm not too unshaven, but because we are away, we're in Glastonbury tonight, and I'm giving a talk along with Clive DeCarl and Sandy Adams. We should have a nice night. With a lovely audience, I want to make sure that any growth has not taken hold by later on. So I shall have a quick cursory shave, as it were. I don't know what that really means, a cursory shave. I'm not cursing it. So it's overcast, it looks like. The sun is trying to get up. It'd be nice to have another nice day for the drive, an uneventful drive, leaving... Well, Friday is always difficult on a Friday, but we are going west. So hopefully that's okay, although a lot of people may have come from the west to go east to go to places of work and things and then heading back, so it might be a bit slow, but we will leave plenty of time. In the meantime, I have got to produce two videos and The Naked Englishman and just go through the emails a little bit, so I'm aiming to leave by 11:30, I think, or 11 if I can, but 11:30, so I can pick up Julia, excuse me, who is at her mum's, who's going to look after the kids whilst we do this gig in the evening, and then we're back. Julia has her niece, who is, I can't remember now, 2 years old, I think, has her birthday party, so we are going to that, which is Julia's brother's daughter. I feel clogged for the moment, but it will clear. It's the trouble having a good night's sleep. Anyway, sometimes, you know, coming downstairs, making a hot drink, switching on the recorder and getting on with the world, it sort of forces you to wake up, and I like that. I've been doing this Naked Englishman now for, well, do you know, 18 years. Isn't that incredible? 18 years. That is staggering. Right, I'm just opening up. Let's just turn this light on. I've got a little light here. The English Year, compiled by Geoffrey Grigson, and it's the fourth, I said. So there's only a couple of entries in our diarist's diary. Mushrooms abound, made ketchup. I wonder if he means ketchup. Is ketchup... This is Gilbert White in 1779. Is ketchup a derivation from ketchup? Or is ketchup a misword of ketchup? Or are the two completely different? That's interesting, isn't it? Made ketchup. C-A-T-C-H-U-P. Francis Kilvert in 1871, almost 100 years later, just over 100 years, in fact. No, not quite. Almost. 91 years later or something. Anyway, doesn't matter. A mournful splendour in the brilliant gold of the sloes and the crimson leaves of the pear trees. That's it. That's your thing. So a little bit of description. Basically, I think getting to the point that they're in autumn and it's very autumnal at the moment. The trees, we went to the farm shop yesterday and Julia drove and I was observing the trees. And the tops of the trees around Arundel were glowing in the sun when it came out. Excuse me a minute. And they're turning yellow, of course. And some in sort of golden towards an orange, which is what I want my Meerschaum pipe to turn into as I smoke it. Very enjoyable. I need to buy some more alcohol. Don't do alcohol very much. We occasionally have a glass of port, that's about it. What am I talking about? I need to buy some more tobacco. And I am enjoying my pipe immensely. You know, not like a 8 or 9 times a day or something. Once a day, probably. Sometimes not at all. But I am enjoying it, and it's very easy to a bit like logs, actually. Funnily enough, I say that because the tobacco is easy to sort of be, you know, forget. Oh, I haven't got any more, and you've got to go and order it, and you don't know how long it will take. Usually takes 2 or 3 days, but with the logs, you've got to book a month or two in advance. And John, dear John, who delivers my logs? I had 3 bags. I usually do 3 bags. Last year, I did 4 bags on one delivery. These are the meter square bags. And I did that because he gets so busy. And I ordered 3. And so we've had a delivery a couple of weeks ago. And you know, the chill started to come. We did actually light the front room fire one day when it was chilly. Mainly, I lit it for Julia, as well as the Essie, you know. So your logs just start to deplete very quickly. And I thought, oh, golly, how are we going to get through? So I ordered some more logs, and he said he'd be at the end of November. And I thought, crikey, we've got all of October, and then all of November. That's 6 to at 8 weeks, isn't it? I thought, I don't know that these are going to last. So, but that's the earliest he can do it. Now we are going to pick up some logs when we go up to see Mark Byford over the weekend when we go up, I think next weekend or something, in which we're going to an electroculture afternoon to see what a chap called Andrew Munro has been up to. With some Italian electrocultural specialists on their farm, which would be fascinating to see how that is operating. They're calling it energy gardening because you're using energy from the ether, which I believe somebody called Michael Morehouse, is it? Somebody like that in 1880 something is allegedly to have disproved. Or rather, proved that ether didn't exist, but that may have been something that the elite, the parasites, wanted us to believe because they didn't want people to use the ether for getting energy of some description. And apparently, it was then taken off the periodic table. Was it ever on the periodic table? Somebody said it was never on it. Anyway, so I can't quite remember where I was going with all of this. This is the problem of doing this first thing in the morning, as you can probably gather. But logs, yeah, so anyway, I text him back and I said, can you make it 4 bags when you come? Because I need to get a date in January as well. So I've left that with him. He may have texted me back, actually. I just do it by text. He's a great guy, great fun. And he comes in his truck and he reverses it up the lane at the back of the house, and he's got a crane and he lifts them over. So I've said, "Oh, can you do that?" He also keeps bees, and we always get a couple of jars of his honey, which is delicious. Now, is that? It is one of the best honeys that Julia and I have ever tasted, and we both agree it. And I wonder if that's because it is local. We do occasionally buy some from Charlie's Farm Shop. Julia likes it in her teas and things. And she says it's good, but it's not as good. And that's not quite as local. John, he is only 3 miles away. On the Downs, this side, excuse me, this side of the Downs, our side of the Downs, the south side of the Downs, 3 miles away. So I think that is very good. What was I going to say? We went to Barbara O'Neill's and event in Scotland recently, and we've bought some castor oil. Was never really sure what castor oil is, but apparently it comes from a plant. And from the picture, it looks a bit like aloe vera, but it's a different type of thing. And so it's an oil that's been extracted from the plant, which is a thick, gloopy oil. It's like olive oil in colour, but it's much thicker. It is like, well, almost, I think it's even thicker than the oil you'd put into your in your car. It is a very gloopy, thick substance, but apparently it does wonders for the skin. And I put a bit in the bath last night, and this morning, yes, my skin feels really good, so I might do that again. But you can use it to re-nurture the skin. Apparently, you can do it to re-nurture the hair. So Julius swore by it. You can buy small bottles of it, but we bought a half-liter container, which was about 25 quid or something. Because in the end, you know what it's like. You buy something, it runs out, and you go, oh, I need to get it back. So we're just trying to buy things in larger, because in bulk, as it were, or a bigger tub of it, because it works out cheaper. Obviously, you've got the initial outlay, but I think we've seen them for a tenner for a tiny little bottle at these fairs, these health fairs. Made by the same company, and you just think, well, that's people being ripped off, isn't it? People at an event, they're excited up, you know, by a talk, and then someone's flogging it, and you go, yeah, no, I'll get that. Oh, is it £9.99? Yeah, okay, I'll get that. And actually, if they spent a bit of time, they could probably find it a hell of a lot cheaper. But, you know, people have got to make a living. And on that, I think I mentioned, did I mention I was thinking of writing a book? I can't remember. Yes, it's still playing in my mind to do this. It's time, and the trouble with me is when I get fixed on something. When I was writing the children's books, I was writing them, but in order to do that, I did it every morning, 5 o'clock, 5, 6 o'clock. I would get up and spend a couple of hours doing the first draft and then editing a second book in the afternoon. And, excuse me, I can't write, you know, a page or two one day, wait a week, come back and do another paragraph. I can't do it like that. And at the moment, I'm still doing these videos and what have you. And I'd like to be able to say, right, I'm going to take 6 weeks off and I shall write this book. And I'll probably write it in about 3 to 4 weeks, and then it just needs editing. Probably take a couple of weeks to get a basic edit. Then I need to send it to somebody to proofread it, and perhaps suggest things, and then I may need to revise it myself. So the whole process, I think, would take at least 2 months. Some people spend a lot longer, but I kind of know what I want to talk about because I've been talking about it. It's just putting it into nice English so that people can understand it, which would be good. I have a gentleman called Paul Yates coming on the show in a week or so. He wrote a book called The Title Is Not Important.
He has written a couple of other books called... His latest book, which he says is very good, How to Make the Creditor Liable and Correct the Record. It's called The Big Stick. And he's very kindly sent me a copy, and it is actually, it's fascinating. This is yet, I think it's been out a little while, so you can get it. But he also sent me another one called Poking Crocodiles, which is a little older. I'm just trying to see when this was. It doesn't actually say when it was published. I don't really know what this one's about, but here we go. Let me read you what it says. Oh, 2002. So this is quite an old one, but I haven't started to read this, but I started to read his other one. This one is Willie Daiche. I don't know how you pronounce his name. It's D-A-I-C-H-E. Daiche? Darkie? Darshi? Says, I rob banks. They paid me to stop. William Daiche. William Daiche, let's say that's that, isn't anything special. He's an average middle-ager who likes eating cake and helping people. After discovering a banking Bible buried in an old library, he and his two friends uncover some startling and powerful information, and very soon things don't look all that promising for the banks. Turns out the law is crystal clear about banking, so how they have managed to disregard it for so long without being caught? Is someone turning a blind eye? Can Willie and the boys really discharge credit cards and personal loans without paying a penny? Can it be that simple? And what are the consequences of going up against the banks, David and Goliath style? Their clients quickly become debt-free and happier almost overnight, and good news like that spreads wildly. The banks are panicking and losing millions. This can't be good, can it? Will it cause societal collapse? Or will the banks have to come clean and make massive reparations and rebuild their businesses with transparency and honesty? This is a true story. It just hasn't happened yet. That's interesting. So this is I didn't realise that. This is a fiction book. Oh, that's very interesting. So this, I suppose, is a book that is showing you there are loopholes with the banks. And this must have been the first book that Paul had written. So that's a story. The Big Stick, which has come out, let me tell you about that. This is a follow-up to The Title is Unimportant. This work explores the remedies available in law to create the imposition created by the business with banks, credit card providers and financial organisations. Building on the methods employed in the first book, this volume details the continuance of the process to provide a final settlement to the matter, where financial institutions must, by virtue of their obligations to operate within the legalese rules, correct the situation and thus rebalance the equation to remain within lawful operating practices. Drawing guidance from heavyweight legal tomes that sit on most lawyers' bookshelves and legislation itself, this book presents a series of options to be used in painting the creditor / debtor collector, etc., into a corner. Once at this point, they can either do the right thing or face the consequences. The Big Stick shows how to recover everything the bank has taken and correct the record of our credit file. So that's what it does. And if you're interested in that, it is now available. And it talks about law reform, it talks about the Corporation Act, it talks about, I'm just flicking through to see what it does talk about, the Financial Act. So the banks are taking money from you left, right and centre. And this is, as it said there, this is a way of correcting it. But it is interesting, and actually it's given me a few ideas for not only monologues, but actually conversations with the bank themselves. Because they do, you know, a lot of these companies, I mean, one of the things, about it talks about contracts at the first, and one of the things that we get into is contracts with all sorts of our utility suppliers. We get into contract with, well, obviously the bank, but all the mobile phone suppliers and various things. Now, here, it says at the beginning, let me read this bit to you, because this is worth knowing. If I can just get to chapter one, first of all, hang on. I'll just read this bit to you, because this is... It's about the fact that... where is it? I've read this so many different places. Hang on, there's a list. It's taken the list and then it goes into each little part of the list. But sorry, I wanted to put this over a bit more clearly. Oh, is this it? I just lost the page. Hang on, bear with me. So, when you contract, there's a number of things that you should do, and there's a number of things that shouldn't happen. So here we go. The contract, yeah. So I'll just go through this list. Actually, it would be easier, because when you make a contract, a contract should be the meeting of the minds. You should both have something of value. And they should be appropriate. So in other words, if you're, let's say, a mobile phone contract, you go to a mobile phone shop, you say, I'd like to have a mobile phone. They say, yeah, no problem. You choose a SIM, and then you need some sort of airtime contract or whatever it is, so that you get the data and the amount of phone calls and blah, 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 and the connection to whomever it is. So you go in, and it's already, they put it down as an agreement. You know, and it's a one-sided thing, isn't it? But it shouldn't be one-sided. And you should read through the agreement. Most people just feel they have to sign this agreement. Don't really read it. And it shouldn't be this way, because a contract should be a meeting of the minds, that you say, OK, I'll give you this amount of money I think is worth the service that you're providing. So it should be value for money. There should be full disclosure that everything in the contract is in that one contract, that one contract cannot change. But you'll notice over a period of time, you'll get a letter or whatever and say, our terms and conditions are changing. When it's like, well, yeah, that's fair enough, but it shouldn't affect my contract. But it does. Now, it may be in the contract that they have written in the very tiny print that their terms and conditions can change at will. Well, in theory, you shouldn't be signing a contract that says we can change the terms and conditions, because that's not how a contract works. Terms and conditions should not be able to be changed by one side, because otherwise you should be able to write back to them and say, my terms and conditions have changed. The contract should be, as I say, a meeting of the minds, that you both agree, and they have to agree to your conditions so that it's fair. But it isn't. All these contracts are one-sided. We get, you know, so in other words, where do you go to have a mobile phone contract? Because they've got the technology to do it. And if you don't agree to their terms, then you are stuffed. They'll say you can't have the contract. Now, if enough people said, well, we don't want this type of agreement, then they would be forced to let you add your points to the contract. But because they have the monopoly on the technology, it seems perfectly not sensible. It seems perfectly much in their favour that they go, well, we've got you by the balls. And that's unfair. And a contract should not be unfair. That, again, is another one. And so there are things that shouldn't be in the contract, things like deception. If they've deceived you by putting stuff into the small print you can't read, or they haven't included stuff in their so-called contract, then it means it's not a contract. Failure to disclose stuff, again, that's failure to disclose would be if they haven't put stuff in which they later say is in. Deception is deception, of course, is if they've deceived you into signing the contract, which in a way this contract is a deception because you can't have a meeting of the minds. Misappropriation, misrepresentation, concealment, commercial damage, defamation, embezzlement. I mean, there's lots of things that should not be in these contracts. And this is what the sort of contracts with the banks they're doing. It should be an agreed thing. I forget where the page. I was looking for the page. I can't. That is really what the banks are doing. There are five main principles, I think, of a contract, but there's very many more probably. Anyway, I can't find the thing. But that is the issue, isn't it? And we need to get contracts. I mean, this is something that one can talk about. I could talk about on the. I'm just going to turn the internet on in a monologue. It is fascinating that we are being deceived and that these contracts are not proper, and we're being effectively blackmailed. You either have this or you don't, and that isn't right. Well, I'm just letting the cat out now. Sorry, you do get behind the scenes, don't you? First thing in the morning, it is a blue sky out there. Off you go then, puss. Nudge you out. I had to nudge him because he wouldn't go. Like some mornings, he said, oh, let me out, let me out, let me out. You open the door and he just looks out. And not necessarily wet, because if it's wet, he won't go initially. Eventually he will. And he just looks. It's like, well, come on, it's getting cold now. Are you going out? I don't know. So now, you know, little tap on the bum. Oh, OK, I'm out. And that's the way it works. So, right. There probably won't be a Naked Englishman tomorrow, because we're going to Glastonbury, staying overnight, and then heading to this Nice party of Julia's. So I will bid you farewell, but we will be back the following day, whatever that is. So thank you very much for listening, if you did, and I hope some of that was entertaining, if not enlightening, but entertaining is part of it. Until the next one, thanks for watching, listening. Bye for now.